step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 625. My name on this Wednesday is Lisa Sheps, and I am joined by Wednesday's co-host all the way from the great state of New Jersey, Miss Nicole Shiro.
Hello!
You are listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming this guy live at koop.org, and during this pandemic, we are homegrown and pre-recorded. Stick with us.
Troubles and raise your cup. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh yeah.
Woo! A blessing on your house, Mazel Tov.
It is Wednesday, July 14th, 2021. On the show today, we have the City Theater and their show, Gross Indecency, the Three Trials of Oscar Wilde by Moises Kaufman. And of course, Nicole and I are going to have a lovely discussion about the world of theater in Austin, Chicago, New York, and Schmigadoon. Stick with us.
Sure.
Yes, it could.
Why not? Who could be mistaken?
Frumacera, Frumacera, Frumacera.
Frumacera. It's going to be in my head all the time. I kind of just want to play Frumacera.
I think I would make an excellent Frumacera.
I mean, I've played three of the daughters, but I really feel like I could totally want to get down playing Frumacera now.
Yeah, so I'm all for it. So Frumacera, by the way, has one number in the show.
Yeah,
that happens about an hour into the first act.
Mm-hmm.
So, which actually says a lot about how long that show is, because it's famously long, which we've talked about on this program before. But that's,
it doesn't seem long. Like Follies is famously long and seems long, but Fiddler to me does not seem long.
I agree, but you know that well. I'm not going to, people can go back and hear on episode blah, 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 when we talked about the whole story around Fiddler and it's 2 hour and 59 minute running time. but I played that because we talked about on this show, God, I'm going to guess several weeks ago about this show that was opening. Hold on. I keep forgetting the person's name, starring Jackie Hoffman, called Frumacera Waiting in the Wings. And we talked about it on the show and it sounded like so much fun.
I love Jackie Hoffman. She's a pistol.
She is a pistol. It's called a monologue with occasional interruptions. So it's basically a one person show about a woman playing Frumacera in a community theater production of Fiddler on the Roof. And she's hanging by something up in the thing and she's talking to the crew. And we just thought, oh, not only is it a community theater, but specifically it's a New Jersey community theater.
Of course it is. Why wouldn't it be?
Which paints a whole nother picture. So I think it's perfect. It opened and there is a review.
Oh, and what did it say?
So the review is by Alexis Selinsky of the New York Times. Not crazy about it, unfortunately.
Not crazy about the piece, or wasn't crazy about Jackie Hoffman in
the piece. She loves Jackie Hoffman as much as you could. But Jackie Hoffman is known as someone, she usually plays smaller roles and comes in and steals the show. This time it's hers. Although they said the show is, well, it kind of talks down to people. She says the humor is bad. It says they don't know who's doing the laughing and who's being laughed at. And it said mostly the play punches down. Not crazy. She says the play is at least 90% kvetching.
I mean, are you surprised by that, though? Doesn't it seem like that'd be a play that would be like that?
Well, she put it in political senses. It's not very progressive in terms of its thinking politically. For instance, there was a whole there was a thing about somebody saying the gender the pronoun police and making fun of the pronoun police, things like that.
From a Sarah? Where's the connection there?
Well, I don't know. I haven't seen the show, but it's not necessarily about Fiddler on the Roof. It's about this woman playing Frumacera waiting to go on.
I know.
Yeah. So she didn't like it. It was directed by Brandon M. Burns. He was also credited with the original concept. And in the review, she says, quote, "Are the jokes cheap? They seem heavily discounted. It's politics, while ostensibly liberal, skew conservative." And that's fine, or it could be. Likely not everyone in Roselle Park votes a progressive ticket, but who thought a zinger about the pronoun police should make it into previews? As excited as it is to be back in a room with people mostly laughing together, it's still worth asking who's doing the laughing and who's being laughed at. Like a very tall boxer, the play mostly punches down. I wanted it to be a better review than that.
It's the only review you found?
It's the only review I looked at. Listeners to this show will know what a New York Times snob I am, and that's typically what I look at.
Yeah, but I don't ever base anything on one person. I've enjoyed a lot of things where I see cruddy
reviews.
That's
true. Absolutely true. Very, very, very good point. So here you and I are going to look at something together, if I can make this work. And then we're going to talk about it. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All I said is we should bail on the hike. I didn't mean us in general. I just meant the hike.
You don't want to make our relationship better?
Our relationship is fine.
What's that?
Church bus? Schmigadoon?
Welcome to our little town,
where friends are all you meet.
Must be something they do for tourists.
Hey, everyone.
Hey there, Pete. Woo!
Can we go now?
Already?
What?
We can't leave. It's like magic. We're in an actual musical.
Please, God, no.
Everybody!
He said we're only here till we found true love. Do you think this is true love?
What does that even mean? Who knows what Schmigadoon thinks is true love?
Which of you ladies wants to cross this bridge with me?
You want to try with other people?
We're the men!
What a beautiful couple you two make.
Stop it. You are stunning. Compared to you, I'm a barefoot mess.
Ah! Let's go find your shoes, shall we?
There's all for all, whether great or small. There's no brother all in your palace all.
We're stuck here forever.
You're just going to give up?
We're smart. We found our way out of IKEA. We'll find a way out of here.
Ladies, can I get a cackle?
We're in a musical, okay? Nobody gets killed in a musical, except Oklahoma and Carousel and South Pacific. Oh, hello, West Side Story.
That's all the musicals.
So, Schmigadoon. What a great thing! What a great cast! I'm looking so forward to it.
The cast is great, and I love the candy-like atmosphere of the backdrop versus the reality versus like the fake versus like architecture-looking tree. Like, I just, the whole look of it looks fun.
Of course, folks.
I don't think it's on a streaming service I have, so I don't know how I'm going to watch it.
Of course, folks listening to this didn't see that, but they can also see, they can easily look at it on the YouTubes and see the trailer. It's really fun. It is playing on Apple TV. And if you have someone that you know, Nicole, that has it.
Like the Lisa Sheps? Yes, I may be coming to your house this time.
Like the Lisa Sheps, who subscribed specifically for this show.
You do a lot of the, they get you, Lisa. You are a person that subscribes specifically for the stuff. I love it.
That's true. So here's the deal. Here's the storyline. Josh and Melissa, a perfectly normal couple whose relationship, despite a magical start, has stalled after a few years of dating. In an attempt to rekindle the flame, they set out on a camping trip and end up stumbling upon and becoming trapped in the town of Schmigadoon. Melissa, a musical theater nut, finds it charming, at least at first, but Josh has no patience for any of it. The only way out of Schmigadoon is apparently to cross a bridge with one's true love, but when they attempt to leave, they find themselves right back in the musical land. So it looks like so much fun.
It does. And to see Aaron Allen and Jane made me more like the happiest of happiest people.
Jane Krakowski. Alan Cumming, and I don't know who you mean by Aaron. Oh, Aaron Tveit. Tveit.
Yes.
Got it. You said Aaron, and I heard Aaron. See the difference? This was created by Cinco Paul and Ken Dario, and it is, as I said, on the Apple channel, and it just looks like so much fun. The first two episodes will be available in 2 days on July 16th.
I was like, and I think this was one they weren't doing all the seasons, like all the episodes at once. You have to watch like a few at a time, right? Like there's right. two and then two, I think.
Well, typically it's been two and then one. Oh. For most shows. I don't know about this one. But yeah, they started, instead of just having everything available, they're going back to like the series kind of thing. So you have to tune in.
I like that better. It gives you the anticipation and excitement. And you're like, you have conversations about what you saw, what's coming up.
I'm of mixed emotions about that. So I can go either way. But that's, I'm looking so, so forward to it. I didn't print the article on what we're going to talk about next, but if you remember back, a few weeks ago, we talked about Paul Huntley, the wig maker, and I inadvertently said he had passed away, but what he had done instead was he just stopped working because the pandemic.
Did Paul call you on the phone and let you know that was not correct?
He did back then. Actually, I corrected myself on the air, but now I sadly have to report that he has passed away.
Really? Well, what did did we jinx him?
Maybe. I hope not.
Sorry, Paul.
Yeah, but I think he was 80 years old and he was a wig maker. He did 89 years old. And he was the wig maker to the stars, and he did beautiful wigs. And almost every single Broadway show back in the day was a Paul Huntley show. I had the honor of meeting him.
Wig from him.
That's it. You don't, you're gobstruck with that.
I mean, I'm not really wearing it too often, but I do have a wig.
Nicole Shearer, remember when we talked last week about how Hamilton got $30 million from the government?
Yep.
Well, here's an interesting thing, and I don't know whether you saw this or not. Waitress got $10 million.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the interesting part of it. Waitress closed in January before the pandemic.
I was just about to say, I didn't understand why or how, because it closed. Is it because the tour was going on and they had to stop the tour? But I don't think it was still touring.
No, but that was touring, but the tour also got $16.9 million. So the $10 million went to the Broadway show. So we're not quite sure how they did that.
I'd like to get in the heads of these people making these decisions.
Me too. So other companies other than the ones that we've already talked about that got money, Phantom of the Opera got $9.9 million. Chicago got
that.
Well, and yet why? They've got lots of money. Chicago got $10
million. And isn't Waitress coming back? Did I not see that Waitress is coming back?
With Sarah Bareilles in the lead role. Right. So Ain't Too Proud got $10 million. Stomp got $4 million. So it's interesting. But the Waitress thing mystifies me because it was supposed to be loss of revenue due to COVID-19, and it closed prior to COVID-19.
So maybe they knew it was coming back and we didn't. And that's maybe
that
because of the delayed stuff. I don't know.
Possibly. On not a lighter note, but a more happy note. I didn't even know about this. Billy Porter has a gospel musical called Sanctuary. Have you heard of that?
Yes, I have.
Well, it is going to be streaming July 29th through August 2nd. The book is by Billy Porter and the music and lyrics are by Kurt Carr. And it's a virtual presentation with performances by Deborah Cox, Brian Terrell Clark, Letzi, and Virginia Woodruff. And it's directed
I love Deborah Cox. She did, I think the last theater she did, she was on the Bodyguard tour.
Awesome. It's also directed by Alan Renee Lewis. You can get, you can click to find more information about it at our website, offstageonair.com.
I'm curious. So like, we haven't heard funding for like Tina or Six or like, I find that kind of weird.
So here's something also that you probably knew, that Rick Bayless has a show in Chicago about food. Did you see that?
No, but I mean, he is the food guy. So
he is the food guy. He owns a lot of restaurants in Chicago and is a James Beard Awinter. But he's teaming up with Windy City Playhouse to create this show that is not going to be played at the Playhouse, which is up north, kind of away from things on Irving Park. But they found a place in the Loop, in a basement place in the Loop that they're going to do it in.
Interesting.
And it's about...
When is it open?
Well, hold on. I'm going to get there. Let's talk about what it's about first.
I'm going to Chicago in October, so I'm wondering if I can see it.
You're just going to have to wait with the rest of the audience. So it says it's going to be all the things that they deal with in restaurants, like online reviews, the health department, influencers, and of course, some of the actors or some of the cast characters are going to be a heavy drinking chef, customers fighting with their partners in public, a corrupt health inspector, and a spy from the restaurant's competition. The name of this piece is called A Recipe for Disaster. And you might want to know when it's going to open. October 6th.
Oh, yeah, I'll be there. My cousin's running the marathon.
There you go. So I believe they scheduled it around your schedule. So that's good. But it sounds like a lot of fun. I like shows around food.
I do, too. I wish I saw the one that Raul Esparza was in. That was off Broadway when he was cooking.
That's, I forgot the name of it, but it's something that I want to do here in.
It extended like 3 or 4 times.
It did. Another musical that's in the works. It's a movie that they're creating a musical for. And I think we may have talked about it because it's been around for a while, but they actually have an Equity casting notice for it now. So it's happening and it's Karate Kid musical.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about this. I mean, I did not like that they redid the movie and there was no karate in it. It was all kung fu. So why still call it Karate Kid? Change it to kung fu. They're two different cultures, two different arts. Miyagi's Miyagi. I just, you know.
I just love that you don't have an opinion, that your opinions aren't very strong. So this piece is screenwriter Robert Mark Kamen. Music and lyrics are by Drew Gasparini.
And the director is a Japanese director.
Correct. Eamon Miyamoto.
Mm-hmm.
Choreography is going to be Keon and Mary Madrid.
So Karate was founded and started in Okinawa.
Well, there you go.
Oh, I was supposed to be going to Okinawa this summer, but you know.
I know you were. So we have yet another musical movie remake. I'd be interested to see how you feel about this one. I know you've talked about it. We've talked about it here. But of course, this is Bill Condon directing Guys and Dolls. It's actually been on the...
I actually kind of am like, Guys and Dolls could be redone at this point. I think it's okay to do. Just going to depend on how they cast it and film it.
They've been trying to do it for a while. There was a was one point that they had Channing Tatum and Joseph Gordon-Levitt pegged for a
which
remake.
I think he'd be great in it.
Well, there's those were two names, but I guess you're talking about Channing Tatum.
I was talking about Joseph Gordon-Levitt. I think he would be great in it.
But so it's it looks like it's going to happen again. Corden is known for directing Chicago and Dreamgirls. He also co-wrote The Greatest Showman, which I know you're not a big fan of. And he did he directed Beauty and the Beast.
Nice.
Yeah. So with that, we'll listen to a little piece. What's your favorite Guys and Dolls song?
Take back your mink, take back your pearls. What's that one?
That's a good one. I don't know, but we'll play that one. I forgot the name of it, but it'll be in the show notes.
It's Adelaide. That one and A Person Can Develop a Cold. That's my other one I love.
Okay, well, we'll stick with Adelaide, which is good. I mean, so many others are more well-known, but that's good. I like playing the less well-known one. So here we go. Here it is.
He bought me the fur thing 5 winters ago. And the gown the following
we fall. Are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Nicole and
Lisa.
And we are pre-recorded. This show is pre-recorded on Monday. So here in Austin, things are gearing up again, and we're starting to come to life. Last night, for us, it's Monday. So last night on Sunday night, Austin Playhouse opened their show live, which I had tickets for, but wasn't unable to go, which saddened me. And that was the Clara Barton musical that we had on the show here a couple weeks ago.
Clara Barton.
The Battlefields of Clara Barton. Remember, there were more than one battlefield.
Well,
not
she
just
had
the Civil War.
Life.
She did. I don't know how it went. I'm going to assume it went wonderfully. And like I said, I couldn't go because Ground Floor Theater was rehearsing our first day of rehearsal on our next show that's going to open in August. So
it's exciting, but that's a bummer you didn't get to go. Well, this will be over by Wednesday, but Lisa, you could have another chance to go tonight or tomorrow if you wanted to.
Yeah, probably won't be able to, but I appreciate that thought. So the good thing is that Austin is starting to gear up and all sorts of people are getting ready to do shows again, live and in person with people in the house sitting shoulder to shoulder, enjoying and working with the cast on the other side of the imaginary fourth wall. To that end, probably one of the first non-socially distanced full capacity. Oh, no, it's not full capacity. Never mind. I take it back. But we spoke with City Theater, who's opening a show in a couple of weeks at Trinity Street Playhouse. And let's listen to that interview, shall we?
Let's.
Well, in the month after Pride, we are lucky enough to have a show coming back. Our theaters are coming back strong, and we're here with City Theater, who's doing Gross Indecency by Moises Kaufman. And we have our very good friend, Andy Berkofsky, artistic director of City Theater and director of this piece. Hello, Andy.
Yes. Thank you so much for having us on, Lisa.
You are quite welcome. And we have three of the cast members. We have Meredith O'Brien. Hi, Meredith.
Hello.
Scott Papa. Hi, Scott.
Hey, glad to be back.
And Zach Barrett, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having us.
Well, I'm glad to have you. So people will know, I think probably the most popular work or the most well-known work by Moises Kaufman is The Laramie Project. And this Gross Indecency, tell us, Andy, what Gross Indecency is about.
Let's see. Well, Moises wrote, it's kind of funny and interesting, order of how he wrote the plays that he has wrote, that he actually wrote Gross Indecency before he wrote The Laramie Project. It's the style that Moises writes with Gross Indecency is much like that he did with Laramie Project. It is using the, like in Laramie, where he went to, you know, the Tectonic Theater Project went to Laramie and talk to the people that were part of that story. In a sense, he kind of does the same thing, even though we're talking about something that happened at the turn of the century. He goes back to all of the writings of Oscar Wilde, including De Profundis, Dorian Gray, and he takes all of this information, and it's pretty incredible what he does, and builds a story around it. In that then these characters and these people that were part of Oscar Wilde's life then come to life on stage through the writing that he does. And it's very fascinating. You can tell the hard work that Moises Kaufman put in to the script, trying to develop this story about the three trials that he went through in his life. So we
should say that the entire, we're talking about Oscar Wilde, but we didn't really say the entire title of the script, which is Gross Indecency, right. The Three Trials of Oscar Wilde. So this is all about Oscar Wilde, who was well known early in the world as a gay man, which was not very... was kind of frowned upon at the time.
Yes, it was taboo. Absolutely. And that is one of the major themes of this play, along with many others, about what happened to him in his writing and his lifestyle and his choice of relationships and how it was, of course, very much frowned upon in that period. Absolutely.
All right, so let's talk about who we got here and what we're playing. Meredith, what character are you playing in this piece?
I'm actually playing Oscar Wilde.
Awesome.
Yes.
I love that.
Yeah, I'm just so excited the opportunity that Andy gave me to explore that and the whole gender issue. It adds something to that issue by having a woman play Oscar Wilde.
So are we changing the gender of Oscar Wilde, or are you playing Oscar Wilde as Oscar Wilde?
I'm playing Oscar Wilde as Oscar Wilde.
Oh, that's awesome. And how much fun is that for you?
Gloriously fun. such an experimental process, many layers. It's been amazing. Yeah.
Well, wonderful. And Zach, who are you playing?
Yes, I'm playing Lord Alfred Douglas, the young lover of Oscar Wilde.
The YL, we call those in the business.
Yes. Sorry, I'm a little bit new to it. That must have slipped by me.
Well, that's awesome. And then, Scott, who are you playing?
Initially, I'm playing the Marquess of Queensberry. He's the one that Oscar sued for libel. And ended up getting the tables turned on him. And then further into the play, I play Charles Gill, who is a assistant prosecuting attorney for the second trial. And then in the third trial, I play Frank Lockwood, who is the prosecuting attorney there. So I give Oscar a hard time all the way through the show.
Excellent. And this is a 5-character play. So who are playing the other 2 characters?
Well, there's actually, there's 9 actors in the play.
Yes, I'm sorry. I knew that. Never mind.
Yeah, and they're actually, it's interesting to note, Meredith and Zach are the only 2 actors, I'm thinking, the only 2 actors in the play that are only playing 1 character.
Ah, okay.
Again, the way, you know, Moises wrote it, it's 9 characters, 9 actors coming into the space and playing, I would say, I'm trying to get a count, because even in the program beginning of the script, Moises kind of cheated a little bit and just said, and he said, this actor is playing these 2 characters or 3 characters and others, but it probably ends up, I would say 40 characters.
Awesome.
At least in the play. Absolutely. Yeah.
I love how you're on first name basis with Moises Kaufman. That impresses me. We go way back. Well, I know that. We're prepared to hear a little piece of the show. Is that correct?
Yes.
So does somebody want to set it up for us and then we'll run into it?
I can set it up.
Okay.
So I'm going to do a piece at the end of the very end of the play. So all the 3 trials have happened and this is really not the very end of the play, actually. There's an epilogue and a coda, but the end of the third trial, I would say.
Awesome. Okay, so they're wonderful. This is Meredith O'Brien doing a monologue from Gross Indecency, The Three Trials of Oscar Wilde at City Theater.
I was a man who stood in symbolic relation to the art and culture of my age. Few men hold such a position in their own lifetime. I had genius, brilliancy, intellectual daring. I made art a philosophy and philosophy an art. I altered the minds of men and the colors of things. There was nothing I said or did that did not make people wonder. Everything I touched, I made beautiful in a new mode of beauty. I treated art as the supreme reality and life as a mere mode of fiction. I awoke the imagination of my century.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you. My life is a mode of fiction, by the way.
Well, you might try treating art as the supreme reality instead.
I might. So this question for anybody, what has been fun? And I mean, I guess I should preface the question was, I was going to say, what's fun about doing this piece? But we're all coming back to work after almost a year and a half, 2 years of not working. So are we having a good time working again together in a rehearsal process?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
There's only so much.
I'd like to tell my audience they all nodded, which doesn't often work on the radio.
It's amazing. Just being in a theater. Sometimes I look up and I see all the insulation that's sprayed on the pipes, and I see the lights, and I see, you know, the dirty floor, and I could not be happier. It's just, you know, that year was rough for everybody. It also just the collaborative nature, especially of this play, because we are 9 people doing 40 characters. And just to be together as a company, that's one thing that's very exciting to me.
So Andy, why this play and why now?
Good question. And just kind of piggybacking kind of on what Meredith just said. And I know Scott and Zach feel the same way. From the very beginning, when we got together, you know, on all of this, and knowing that we were coming back, you know, not having done theater for a year and almost a year and a half, you know, my through line from the very beginning, and I still use it, you know, through the rehearsal process, is the kind of a quote, doing right by the, you know, the theater space we're working in, you know, like Meredith said, doing right by the company of actors, doing right by the material, you know, doing right by the audience that's, you know, ready to come back. So that through line, I think, has helped us, you know, especially in a play like this, where there's everybody's on stage the entire time. There's no one ever leaves the stage. So that, I think, has real helped to get that collaborative unity that we really need to have, you know, gone through the production process. This was a tough decision. You know, I'm always looking at, you know, when we're doing our season, always in a normal sense, trying to think about plays to do. And, you know, this was always on my list as a play to do. It was in the decision process of coming back, you know, really had to make the right decision. If it was a comedy, it would be too physical and the audience wouldn't be ready for that. You know, somebody, all the actors run to the phone and listening in on that. So, you know, that was a tough call to decide on that. But this play, in a sense of coming back to us as a theater community like Austin is, I think it's really right. And without giving away too much about what the play is, it does evoke and express so many of these things of an artistic community and what it has to say, to, you know, back then and today, of course. Yeah.
And the subject matter is prescient with what's going on in our state currently and around the nation. So I think it's wonderful. So when do you guys open? How long do you run, and where can folks go to get information?
We open July 22nd, and it's 2 weeks through July 31st, Thursday through Saturday at 8 p.m. and over at Trinity Playhouse. Wherever we may try to add a show, and this is, you know, kind of talking about ATX Theater, and we've been hitting some meetings mm-hmm. for that. We may try to do an industry afternoon show. We may add one more show as an Wonderful. Industry afternoon show on a Saturday to get more people to see the production. People can get information at citytheateraustin.org.
Awesome. Well, I'm so happy to have you guys back on the show. And Andy, I don't know if you, in just the last minute or so that we have here, did you want to say anything about City Theater plans upcoming? And also for this particular production, are there any COVID-19 mitigation processes, and what is your mask policy?
Well, we're still working through that at the moment. I'm in contact with Anzarate over there
to decide. Anzarate, yes.
Anzarate, to see, you know, there were some protocols were put into place when they first opened up, you know, a month or two back. And so I'm trying to figure all that out at the moment, you know, as far okay. as temperature checks and social distancing. It will be a limited seating capacity show, mm-hmm. okay. Probably 50 or less. With spacing out, you know, among the guests.
Sure.
And we're still working through some of the other stuff, you know, as far as, you know, COVID protocol. And City Theater, we're still looking for a home. Either I have a couple of, you know, options that are there, just trying to negotiate the, you know, the amount for mm-hmm. the leases.
Sure.
You know, and in fact, just to kind of put a little taste out there, there's one or two churches that are for rent. In
awesome.
We're looking at what's your ideal, you know.
Sure, sure. They've got the seating and a lot of times they have the ceiling height. Well, oh, yeah, again, yeah. Thanks for coming on the show, and I look forward to seeing the show in July, which is this month, in a couple of weeks.
Thank you.
Thanks, man. Okay.
There it is. Moises Kaufman, famous for writing the Laramie Project. I read this newspaper called the New York Times, and there was an article that I think you'll find interesting, the headline of which said, Andrew Lloyd Webber's new act, activism, probably the loudest voice in the West End advocating for theater. But he hasn't always been, as this article talks about, he hasn't always been smart about it. He's gone mm-hmm. against science at times, but he has been advocating on things that needed to be advocated for, and that hasn't been advocated for here in the United States.
I mean, whether I've agreed with him or not, at least he's been a voice.
Agreed. He's been a quote big thorn in the government side.
So even though like England's closed and everything's crazy, I couldn't believe watching Wimbledon that it was full capacity. And I'm like, England, you can't figure out where you're coming or going from or what's happening. And same with the Euro Cup yesterday, completely full.
It's completely full. And that was Lloyd Webber's argument, but there is a difference between outdoors and indoors. So most of the things that have been going with full capacity have been outdoors. And so it's not a one-to-one comparison, but it certainly seems like it could be. That article is available for folks to read at offstageonair.com. So I have a couple of things that I want to talk about that I just found very interesting. If I can find the article here in my notes. And this is talking about intimacy professionals. And this came from The Stage in the UK. And there's an article that says intimacy professionals say their work should be ingrained in drama schools. And they think intimacy, which has become a very big deal in having intimacy directors or intimacy choreographers come in and work with people that are doing things like intimate scenes, but not only sex scenes, anytime touching another person is involved, an intimacy director is a real important thing.
When you're in one's personal space.
Yeah. And they think it should be part of theater school's curriculum. And I agree.
And I agree too.
To that end, I have made an offer to intimacy director to come on the show next week, and we'll spend some time talking to them and getting more information.
Okay, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I have not worked with one. Have you?
No, I have not. And I wish I have. Like, you know, people didn't think about it as much when I was doing theater, and now they do. I'll tell you the best article and I don't want to say fight for it, but advocate for it was a really great article two summers ago that Audra McDonald did an interview doing Frankie and Johnny at Claire de Lune in the revival. And the way she explained it, and then they broke down what intimacy coaches did and talked to the coaches, that really opened my eyes and set a to me, I was like, this should be a precedent and people should really pay attention. And it was in the New York Times, Lisa.
I know, I probably read it. I just learned that.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. So I hope that that we can have her on.
That's cool. And then, I do too.
Yeah. There was another article that the headline caught my eye, and it wasn't quite what I thought it was, but so it brings us to talk to two topics. This is from in The Guardian, and it's all about Katori Hall winning the Pulitzer Prize for drama this year, which is amazing. Katori Hall won for the Hot Wing King play, and the other contenders were Patrick Foley's Circle Jerk and Zora Howard's Stew. But this was an article and an interview with Katori Hall, which seems really amazing. I think Katori Hall's most famous one known is The Mountaintop. About,
okay. I was like, why do I know the name and what? But I was, okay.
Yeah. So it was on Broadway, it was Samuel Jackson and Angela Bassett. Katori Hall also wrote the book for Tina, the Tina Turner musical.
I was like, what did Katori just recently do? And there you go, Tina.
That's what she's done. So what she said was that I thought it was a different article. So this is a quote from her. So I'm quoting the New York Times, quoting her. So quote, I think of theater as a church. It's a sanctuary, she says. To be able to put these characters in a room where you're breathing the same air, it feels so real, more real sometimes than TV. And I know that me and Patty Neftivin often talk about theater church and talking about how the sacredness of the physical theater space and what we've been talking about sitting shoulder to shoulder in the space with actors is all very spiritual to me.
My cousin's girlfriend and I were having this conversation last night, and she was just saying, there's nothing like you connect with people you don't know. And she's not even a theater person. And I'm like, Yes, you get it. You get it. Like, yes, I agree. On the same page. Amen. Hallelujah. And all that jazz.
All that jazz. There's also another article, and we talked a little bit about this once before, but I think this was, and it was indeed in the New York Times. Surprise. It's a call to divert the headline is a call to diversify those calling cues. And we're talking, of course, about stage managers. And I always have to talk about stage managers. 76% of stage managers employed on theatrical productions across the country are white. Only 2.63% are Black. And it's about time that that changes. And so there are programs now to work to get people of color more trained and better access to the jobs of stage manager on theater.
Excellent.
What I found interesting in this, talking to stage managers and how they've been treated and in the past by other things. And there was one person that was hired, could not get hired. So to be clear, on a Broadway show, there's lots of words to describe it, but basically what you have is a stage manager and their assistants. Typically it is the production stage manager is the top dog. And then you have stage manager and then assistant stage manager.
Right.
But so this one person couldn't even get an assistant stage manager job. They hired them as a PA, production assistant, which is a very low level, had no voice in the room, even though they would bring up very salient points. And that's one of the things that the, that our colleagues of color have been telling us for a long time, that we need a voice in the room. And so they, this is the Black Theater Caucus, and they've partnered with organizations like Caves Broadway and beyond to create these initiatives to get stage managers of color trained and in the right room to the right people.
That's cool. Needed.
I thought so too. And we are going to finish up this on a lighter note. This is a little show that's going to premiere on a network called PBS. Don't know what it stands for. In August, it's directed by Bjork Lee, and it is a it is called Wicked in Concert, a musical celebration of the iconic Broadway score. And of course, it's Stephen Schwartz's score. And it looks like a lot of fun.
And Bjork Lee, we should say, is the original Connie from the original Chorus Line.
She is. And you rarely see her name attached since then to anything but Chorus Line, because she does
a lot on Chorus Line. So it's nice to see her in a different lane.
Yes, it is good. So they're going to be filmed in multiple locations, including Washington, D.C., Los Angeles, and New York. The orchestra arrangements are by Luke Frazier with the American Pops Orchestra. It doesn't say who's going to be singing.
I didn't see any cast and stuff. I had, but you know, maybe they'll announce it later. Like, I still haven't seen any more cast on Annie, and I'm checking that feverishly too. So,
oh, here it is. Here's what they say about the casting. Casting will be announced
at a later date. There you go.
There you go. How do you keep you in suspense?
That's how you do it. That's a good publicist.
Yep. So we will walk away from this week's show with the Oz Dust Ballroom song from Wicked.
There you go.
Sound good? Sung by, oh my God. Who played Fiero in the original? I forgot. It was somebody.
Norbert Leo Butts.
Norbert Leo Butts. We love Norbert Leo Butts. Anyway, so you've done it. It's an hour of your time spent with Lisa and Nicole at Offstage and On the Air. We really appreciate you being here with us. We do. And like us on Facebook.
Yes, like us on Facebook and leave us great messages and tell us how much you love us. That's a really good thing.
So, with that's it. With that, we will say ta-ta, arrivederci, and adieu. And adios. We'll see you next week when Lisa and Nicole look at Offstage, What's Offstage and On the Air. Bye.
Dancing through life, skimming the surface, gliding where turf is smooth. Life's more painless for the brainless. Why think too hard when it's so soothing? Dancing through life, no need to tough.